Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jenny Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I'm Jenny Lee Grace. What a week it's been. I've been mad busy this week presenting a comic relief special for BBC Radio 2, also a media training event at the London Book Fair. And of course, really great week because we had our event on Monday in London. So I won't go on and on about it because it's very annoying if you weren't there. But a really big thanks to those who did come along. We had no idea how this would roll because it was obviously our first event. But so many people came and it was a really cool vibe. It's a great club, very funky venue, the Jago in Dalston. And Rachel and her team from the charity My Yard did a really amazing job. And thank you to Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries, and Rock Sober, who kind of launched their new venture, their alcohol-free beer, at the event. And Claire, of course, shared stuff from her TED Talk and from her book, The Sober Diaries. And I just want to say thanks again to Sea Arch, Outfox Drinks and Left Field Kombucha, who helped us out with drinks for the evening and for the raffle, and to all the supermarkets and the cooperatives who regularly contribute surplus for Rachel's charity. They do amazing work delivering healthy food to people in crisis. And it was a really nice event. We had some great feedback. I'm going to read you just one Instagram message because this sums up the evening, actually, whether you were there or not. It's actually quite helpful stuff. She says, "We attended the fabulous Self-Care for the Sober Curious event. Thanks for the tips on alcohol-free living, and especially for pointing out the self-love that is needed in the early days. We noted some great takeaways, the importance of finding a community, finding a tribe that suits you, putting yourself and your decision not to drink as first priority, saying no if something doesn't feel right, and changing up your routines, perhaps starting and ending your day earlier." So thank you for that. I think it was Trish who wrote that on Instagram. I really appreciate that because often when you're actually speaking at an event, you can't remember what you've said. So that's actually really, really helpful for you to have summed up a few of those tips from the evening. And hopefully that's enough to whet your appetite for the next event. We hope to run one at the end of April. It will probably be April the 29th, 2019. So if you want to register your interest, if you can book ahead and plan to be in London. I know it's a Monday evening. It's not easy, is it? But hey, we're going to be announcing our special guests for that very soon as well. So don't miss out on that date or any of the other stuff we're doing. Follow us on Instagram at Jenny Lee Grace. And you know that if you've been listening to the podcast, you'll know that I also give out my email address. It's janie@janieleegrace.com. There's lots and lots of self-care and well-being stuff on my website, imperfectlynatural.com. So check that out too. Now, if you've been listening to this podcast or if you've heard any of the other shows, you'll know that we quite often cite statistics around people drinking in the UK. And particularly around younger people's drinking habits. And the theory, well, the word on the street, if you like, is that millennials, the high percentage of millennials are choosing not to drink at all. Really enlightened. but what about the Generation Zs, you know, the one up from that? And I thought it would be really good to get an insight into that world. So if you're in your 20s or your early 30s, you're going to love this podcast. Well, actually, whatever age you are, there's some really great insights. Millie Gooch, a writer and founder of Sober Girl Society. It's an online community helping girls to navigate sobriety. And Millie was at our event on Monday, along with Scott, who calls himself the boy who drank too much. They're both big time Instagram influencers. And it's such brilliant work they're doing because they're encouraging younger people in this space. Because let's face it, there is a lot to navigate when you start this on your journey. I mean, it's hard enough when you're older and your life is a little more settled. But if you're younger and you've got the whole dating scene and the whole work culture, meeting new people, having to tell them you don't drink, there's a lot to think about. So I think you're going to really enjoy this interview.
So I'm absolutely delighted that my guest is Millie Gooch, founder and writer and creator of Sober Girl Society. Millie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. And we're going to talk more about Sober Girl Society and exactly what it is. But first of all, just share a bit of your story, because obviously lots of the people I interview are closer to my age than yours. And we've all had an awful lot of years of drinking. Yeah. But you're much younger and you represent these millennials that we keep hearing about who are, apparently don't drink as much.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting statistic, which I'm sure we'll get into. So tell us your story.
So I'd say my binge drinking really sort of ramped up when I went to university. And I was always like a real party girl. That's how I defined myself, as how hard I could party. And then sort of as I started to work, my drinking became a bit more of an issue. And it just sort of got to a point where I was going out, I was getting very sort of blackout drunk. So I'd wake up in the morning, I wouldn't remember a good 3 or 4 hours of my night. People would have to fill me in on what I'd done. I would be absolutely mortified. And I'd spend, you know, the whole weekend in bed, hungover, getting that anxiety that everyone's talking about, where I'd just worry about what I'd done or what I'd said to people. And it kind of got to the point where that anxiety wasn't just like a Sunday thing anymore. It started creeping into Monday and Tuesday. And I hadn't traditionally been an anxious person, and I kind of wondered if it was something to do with the alcohol. So that was one of the main catalysts for me giving up, is I'd got to this sort of point where I didn't remember my nights out. So it didn't matter how much fun I was having. If I didn't remember it, then kind of what was the point?
And what did you do then in order to make a change?
I just thought, well, I'd done many sort of dry Januaries. I'd done a few sober Octobers, and I'd always ended up going back. And I loved them so much, and I still don't know why I went back. So I just decided, you know what? And it was the February, so I'd actually caned it in January and gone out drinking when everyone else was doing dry January. And I kind of thought, do you know what? I wonder what my life would be like if I didn't drink. So I just cut it out cold turkey and have just never looked back from that moment.
Wow. And how long ago was that then?
So that was February 2018, so just over a year now,
Wow, fantastic. And I'm guessing that all around you people were drinking. I mean, we'll get onto this statistic. I mean, tell us what your perception is then about, we read that, isn't it something like, 30% of millennials now are choosing not to drink?
Yeah.
I mean, was that your experience? Were people around you, you know, did lots of your friends choose not to drink, or were you quite unusual?
I was actually quite unusual. I think I fall into a little bit of that older millennial generation, because I'm 27 going on 28.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the statistics are around the kind of 18 to 24 group. And I do think there is a real shift in that kind of age group. In my age group, I am still a bit more of a rarity. There is a lovely group that I've now met through Instagram that we all kind of hang out together, which is really nice. But in terms of my immediate friendship group, I am still like the only one who doesn't drink. So I think it is really more of a Gen Z thing than a millennial thing that's coming in now with not drinking.
Sure. And what was the response of your friends then? Because obviously when you're that age, you know, you've got a rocking social life, I'm guessing. you know, so how did you navigate that, at least to start with? You know, what was it like having to tell people? Did you fib to start with and say that you were just, you know, on the wagon for a while? Or how did you navigate all of that?
I think I always say my friends are so supportive. But when I first started, I think they all thought, not that I was joking, but I think everyone's done it. You've been so hungover, you said, oh, I'm never drinking again.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I said to people, I'm never drinking again, they were like, yeah, okay, whatever, I'm sure you will. And then sort of as a few months went on, they were like, oh, she's actually serious about this. She's not going to drink again. So it's not that they weren't supportive in the beginning, but I don't think they thought that it was something that I would keep up. So I never lied from the start, but I found much more of a resistance at the start than I do now.
And so what did you do in those early months? You said you just kind of went cold turkey. Did you put anything in place, any kind of tools as we now kind of think of them? You know, did you join any kind of communities? Did you sign up to anything that gave you support, or were you literally just kind of winging it on your own?
I think I was winging it a little bit. I think this is one of the reasons that I started Sober Girl Society, because when I first got sober, I looked on Instagram. That was my main thing, social media as a millennial. And I found sort of, amazing communities. I found like really good sort of mum support networks, and I found like a lot of really great recovery communities, but I didn't really find anything that I sort of fully identified with as someone who was sort of young and was a party girl, didn't necessarily know what they were in terms of whether they could define themselves as an alcoholic or not. So that was my main thing, to first of all look on social media. So that was the sort of basis, but I still didn't find anything I fully identified with. But in terms of sort of going out and things like that, I threw myself into it, really, which I don't know, it worked for me. I'm not saying it would work for everyone, but I was so worried that it would stop my social life that I thought, right, the first thing to do is just rip the band-aid out off. So a kind of a week into my sobriety, I went on a friend's birthday and stayed out till 4 a.m. in Shoreditch. And I think because I threw myself in so heavy, I was like, oh, I can actually do this. And, yeah. And then I started to feel
better. You can still be fun. You can still have fun.
Yeah. So from the very beginning, I didn't let it change, because a couple of books I'd read kind of said, oh, you know, you're going to need to learn to adapt your life and your social habits. And I didn't really want to do that. I still wanted to, like, go out. I wanted to go to festivals. I wanted to go on holidays. And because of my friends were still drinking, I didn't want to miss out on that. And so I just, threw myself in at the deep end, still went to everything, and just, I don't know, put myself right in it, I think.
Yeah. So it all sounds really positive for you, which is great. Yeah. Were there any downsides at the beginning? I mean, certainly for me, I mean, obviously I'm a lot older than you, but I had a real kind of feeling of, almost feeling quite raw at the beginning.
Yes.
I wasn't quite sure who I was for I had quite a rocky period where I was very emotional.
Yeah.
You know, really short temper, just really emotional. God forbid anyone trying to live with me.
Did
a similar thing happen to you?
Yeah, it did actually. I think at the sort of first few months, I was so excited about this new sober life. And I've spoke to other people about this as well who've had similar experience. And once that sort of initial thing dies down,
sort of like, euphoria.
Oh my God, then you're kind of like, oh, okay, this is me now, actually. And everything from this day forward, I'm going to have to deal with organically. If I have a shit day at work, I'm going to have to not have a glass of wine or anything like that. And you do really learn who you are, what makes you tick. You have to find other hobbies and activities. And I would say you find that you had all this time, and I didn't really know what to do with all this time that I had. And at points I'd be overthinking just because I had all this time on my hands. So I kind of found things to fill that time with.
Absolutely. And what about that anxiety then? Because, you know, you mentioned that those, apart from the blackouts, that kind of anxiety that seemed to seep into the week, not just the weekend. When did you start to feel better? When did you start to notice the positive changes, if you did? Because I'm always kind of conscious that, you know, I don't want to kind of try and make out that by stopping drinking, you'll never have you'll never feel anxious again, because it isn't quite like that, is it? But I'd be interested to know what changes you noticed.
I think initially from the off, the anxiety lessened straight away, because I wasn't in that cycle of, like, you know, Friday, Saturday drinking, just about feeling better by Wednesday, Thursday, and then doing it all over again. So initially there was that sort of drop in anxiety. But in terms of getting rid of it altogether, that wasn't the case. I would still have sort of lulls, but I feel like I've really learned to deal with them so much better, because before, if I was feeling a bit anxious, I'd go out, have a drink, be like, I'm not going to worry about it. And then in the morning, it would just intensify. Whereas now, if anything ever like that comes up, and touch wood, since giving up drinking, it is much better. But if I ever have a day where I feel anxious, I'm able to manage it that much more, because I know all the signs. I can, you know, drink lots of water. I can go to the gym. I've learned to cope with it in a way that it just works for me now. And drinking wasn't that way to cope with it. I don't think it should be the way for anyone to cope with anxiety.
Yeah.
I've heard that quote before, that it's like drinking alcohol when you've got anxiety is like pouring gasoline on it, basically, and making it worse. And I think that's exactly what I was doing. And now I've managed it to a point where it rarely affects my life.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that for many people, they have to stop and recognize that the reason they were drinking was to sort of numb out certain things. And you do, unfortunately, those things don't just go away. Sometimes you just have to look at them square on. And that can be tough, of course.
Yeah. So
what would you recommend as, you know, I mean, I love talking about sort of self-care and the things that we can do. What kind of things worked for you? You know, you mentioned that you took yourself off to the gym or whatever. Yeah. What are the little things that you think really helped you in the early days?
I think spending time with my friends was a great one. I know that's not everyone's self-care, but doing activities that weren't revolving around drinking was an absolute eye-opener for me. And I feel like my relationships with my friends in the past year have increased tenfold just by, like, sitting down, doing something nice. Like, I went on holiday with my friends to Canada and, like, we learned how to surf and we went kayaking, and I just bonded with them in ways that I hadn't done, because your automatic thing when you see your friends is, you know, let's go for a drink, let's go for a night out, let's catch up. And for me, that was a kind of self-care, is to make those deeper relationships with my friends.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. What about the kind of dating side of things? Because, you know, this is, again, this is another big, you know, it's all very well, mate. Well, actually, it isn't necessarily all very well. There's an awful lot of people I've heard say that even though they might, you know, they might have been with a partner for years, that one of them stops drinking and suddenly everything's thrown up in the air again. Yeah. But for a young person, if you're on the kind of dating scene, what are the issues there? What kind of comes up for you? I'm guessing that initially you probably start to think, oh my goodness, can I go on a date sober? Yeah. Where do we go?
Yeah, I think that was one of my really big things when I gave up drinking, because I was single and I thought, oh my God, how am I going to approach this? How am I going to tell people I don't drink? They're all going to think I'm weird. No one's going to want to date me. And I think the longer I've not drunk, the more I've realised people actually find it quite an attractive quality, because it, not only does it set you apart from everyone else in a way, but, you know, you're also, you're clear, you're able to make decisions, you don't turn up to a date and you're sort of like falling over. And the more I've done it as well, and that was another band-aid thing, I thought, God, this is going to be awful. And I went on my first sober date and I was like, actually, it's really not that bad. It's fine. I mean, I've had a couple of sort of experiences where they've drunk quite heavily, and I think whereas that wouldn't have bothered me in the past, now it possibly would. But people always say to me, oh, do you think you could be with someone who drinks? And I say, yeah, I think I could, as long as their drinking isn't the way my drinking was.
Yeah.
As long as sort of they have a healthier relationship with alcohol, then that's fine. But I think if their drinking is a problem, I couldn't probably be with someone like that now.
Yeah. And do you make sure then, or did you make sure that you kind of tell people straight away? Or, I mean, because at the beginning, I don't know if this is the same for you, but I found at the beginning, I didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just some massive secret. It's almost like shame. I've no idea whether I've discussed it on the podcast before, but this thing about shame is just bizarre. Why I should have felt shame, I don't know, but I did. So I didn't tell anyone for about a month and a half. It was, you know, highly amusing. My kids were sort of buying me bottles of wine for my birthday and stuff, you know, because I didn't realize I wasn't drinking. So there's the kind of shame and the not telling anyone. But now you're sort of fully in, as it were. Do you, you know, would you tell someone that you're going to go on a date with? Would you kind of give them a heads up on that? Or doesn't it matter?
I don't think it necessarily matters. But for me personally, I like to tell them straight away, because then I don't have that worry, because otherwise I'll be thinking right up until the moment I get there, how am I going to tell them? How, when they order a drink, am I going to say that I don't drink?
Yeah.
So for me, the earlier I tell them, the less I have to worry. So I don't do it for them at all. I do it for me, because otherwise the whole way up to the day I'd be thinking like all the different ways that, you know, it would be my worry. So I just think the earlier you tell them, the easier it is on you, really.
Just get it out the way, yeah. And so tell us about Sober Girls Society then, a fabulous name. And tell us what you're trying to, you know, what the aim is with that.
Yeah. Someone actually said it to me and I've sort of adopted that. They said, oh, I think you're really glamorising sobriety. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do.
That's brilliant.
And I think that's one of my aims. I think alcohol is so glamorous. I mean, I watched a million episodes of Sex in the City, and every time they've got Cosmopolitan, and alcohol is so glamorous, and it would be so lovely for once if sobriety was glamorized. And I have this big thing about trying to change other people's perception about sobriety. That's one of my really big aims, as well as supporting all the girls out there. I also just want other people to know that you can be fun and sober. You can be the last one on the dance floor. It doesn't have to completely change your life. It is a big change, but your life doesn't have to change. And that's one of the things I really wanted to sort of like put out there.
Mm. So what kind of things are you doing with the community? Is it just online, or is there anything in person?
It started online, and then I've been doing a couple of posts about finding your sober sisters, because I'm very lucky in that I've got a really good support system, but there are a lot of people out there who have messaged me and have said, you know, I've lost all my friends because they're really into drinking and they can't understand why I don't want to drink. There are a lot of people out there who are looking for like-minded people. Mm. And so I've done a couple of posts that have been about finding your sort of sober sisters. And from that, I've had so many people message me across the world to say that they've all met up, which is great. I had a girl sent me a picture of a table of them in Phoenix and said, oh, look, we've all gone for like a non-alcoholic drink together. And we've started doing a few London-based events. So we did a brunch about 2 weeks ago now at Drink Shop Do in King's Cross. And 22 of us, I think, went for brunch. Brilliant. And decorated ice biscuits and sober celebrities, which
excellent. So, yeah. I mean, let's just talk about that then, the kind of the rise in great alcohol-free drinks. You know, we can talk about that, but also the rise in the places that we can go. So, you know, certainly in London, you've got Redemption Bar, and there's probably others that you know about that I don't. And across the country, there's the odd dry bar popping up, isn't there?
Yeah. What
would you like to see happen in terms of social spaces?
I would like to see a lot more at the sort of really generic chains. So I went into a unnamed bar, but it's a big chain, the other week, and tried to order a mocktail. And they kind of said, oh, we're really sorry, we can't do that. And I said, but you've got cocktails. And they said, yeah, I know, but we don't know how to put mocktails through the till. And so I was like, so I can't have one. And they were like, no. So I would like a lot more awareness around those sort of like big chains. I'd really like them to step up their game, because there are some like really great, quirky, niche bars. But it would be really nice if like the big mainstream brands sort of jumped on board. And I think the supermarkets are, which is great.
Yeah, they are. There's a massive change, isn't there? There is a massive change. And also as sort of functions, I know that this is something that we both know Club Soda, and this is something that Club Soda are really working hard for, isn't it? To try and encourage the catering industry as well. So that if you go to a function, I mean, I know you work in the media, and you'll know that even now you go to a function and an awards ceremony or whatever it is, and there literally is the white wine, the red wine, the champagne possibly, and the orange juice, the warm orange juice for you and me.
Yeah.
So it's not okay, is it? It's not okay. But I see what you're saying. So rather than necessarily have lots more dry bars, as it were, you really think there should just be lots of choice of alcohol-free drinks everywhere?
Yeah, I do. I honestly believe it is a revolution. It is really happening. And I think some are getting on board, but I think there's a lot of a lack of sort of training and awareness with staff, especially. I know when I go into a bar, I'm sort of treated like a second-class citizen because I'm not drinking alcohol. So like I'll say things like, what non-alcoholic drinks do you have? And I go, oh, and they give me the menu. And it's like, they can't be bothered. I think there needs to be, they have Coke, lemonade. I think there needs to be sort of more awareness out there in sort of, some of those more mainstream bars that we all still like to go to.
Mm, absolutely. So what would your plans be then for Sober Girl Society? I mean, if I were to interview you in a year, you know, what would you hope would have happened?
I would love to do a lot more events. I'd really love it to be like a community of sort of women-based that just want to get together, want to, you know, talk about the best alcohol-free wine and things like that, and discuss, you know, sober dating, just like a really lovely community. So events are like a really big focus for us at the moment, and we want to make them sort of really holistic events as well. So I know you talk a lot about self-care, so we want to do like, you know, exercise classes or like pamper days. We don't just want them to be, you know, mocktail classes or events that are based around not drinking. We want them to do like different classes and different things so that people can learn new skills. And when you've got all that extra time,
it can often be the time, can't it? When you give up the booze, you often do start to actually care about your body again, and you care about your fitness, and you care about your health. And you know, that's kind of one of my real passions, is to try and encourage people, if they haven't before, you know, this is the time to look at your nutrition and as well as, you know, as you say, filling your time. And maybe some people find a whole new purpose and a whole new job It's amazing the things that crop up, isn't it? What's your take on drinking moderately? Was that ever an option for you? You know, we hear a lot about mindful drinking now.
Yeah.
You choose to moderate.
Personally, it doesn't work for me. If I have one, I'd want more. I just know that, and that's something that I've accepted it. And it was something that I didn't maybe accept for a long time, and I have tried to moderate, and I have said, oh, you know, I'm only going to go out tonight and just have two. And for me, it doesn't work. But I think if it does work for you, great. I'm not, however people want to do their journey to sobriety or sober curiosity, I think that is totally up to them. I'm on my own journey, they're on theirs. If moderation works for them, brilliant, because moderation is better than binge drinking. So yeah. I think you have to do what works for you and what you're comfortable with. And I just personally don't have the willpower or even the desire anymore to moderately drink. It just isn't something that appeals to me at all anymore. But I think if it works for you, great. You have to do what's right for you, 100%.
Yeah, I love the fact that you know, when you gave up, you kind of threw yourself straight in. Because I think for me, this is one of the things I want to try and get across is something that I didn't realize. And that is, you know, as Catherine Gray puts it so beautiful in her title, you know, the unexpected joy of being sober. I genuinely had no idea that it was going to be, that life could be better.
Yeah.
So I had no idea. I didn't even know if I was going to be able to cope, let alone find that it's better. And
yeah,
I think people don't know, do they? People actually don't know that. In fact, at the beginning, most people give up because they probably know they have to. It's not as if it's not really a sort of lifestyle choice because they're thinking, wow, this is going to be fabulous. It's a case of, oh God, I can't carry on like this.
Yeah.
I just
can't.
And what's on the other side feels like it's going to be really scary, really hard, really miserable. And yes, there can be a rocky road to get there. But once you are on the other side, it actually is better. Is that something you've found and something you're trying to share?
Yeah, definitely. I tell people, you know, I don't push it on people, but I categorically say it is the best thing I've ever done with my life. And I would not change it for the world. And you're right. I think you do go through a bit of a rocky patch. I'd say after kind of like, maybe like 7 or 8 months, I just absolutely settled into it. And I was like, this is my life now and I'm going to run with it. And I think that was kind of the time when I started Sober Girl Society, when I was like, I need to tell people how good sobriety is. Like, people need to know that you don't just have to be an alcoholic before you go sober or anything like that. I just think it is an amazing, even if you do it as a lifestyle choice, it's such a great thing. There are so many benefits from it. I'm richer, I'm thinner, my skin's nicer. Just even those sort of surface things, I think, are, you know, great incentives.
That was going to be my next question. What changes do you think you have seen in yourself, or what changes maybe have others seen in you?
I mean, categorically happier. People say to me all the time, I've never seen you this happy. So even that is enough for me. But you know, I did lose weight, and I don't necessarily think that was from the calories of the drink, but it was, you know, the not saying, oh, I need to lie on my stomach, no 4 a.m. McDonald's, no being hungover in bed the next day. So, you know, that was a big thing. My skin is better. I've got more energy. I'm more productive. I never would have got out of bed on a Sunday and gone to a brunch with 22 other girls. I just wouldn't have done that. So the things it's opened up for me and the things I've been able to do, they're sort of like the big changes that are really important to me.
Great. So what would your one tip be then for anyone who's thinking, oh my goodness, you know, maybe someone your age who is very used to being part of a society where, you know, all of their mates are boozing. What would be your kind of one tip to them, really?
I think you have to have confidence in your decision. And I think the more confident you are with people, or maybe assertive, the less they'll try and sort of push you at the start, because the start is the most difficult bit, and it was for me. And I think if you know, people say, oh, do you want to drink, and you kind of say like you did, you know, I'm on antibiotics, or I can't do it for this reason, people will push you a little bit. They'll be like, oh,
just have one.
just have one, get your instructions out, I'm sure you can drink. So I think if you say, no, this is something I really want to do, it's really important to me, and it's going to make my life better, which in turn is going to make your life better. And I think if you're really confident with people, they're like, oh, okay, that's fine, you don't need to drink. So I think just really have confidence in that decision that what you're doing is the best thing for you and is going to make your life better. So don't worry about what other people think. There are great communities out there. There are plenty of people that you can speak to if you know your friends aren't understanding, but just try and be as assertive with them as possible, I think, at the start.
Great. So where can people find you then if they want to find out more about the work of Sober Girl Society?
So we're on Instagram as Sober Girl Society and just started Twitter, which is Sober Girl Sock, but I'm not very good at Twitter, so we're getting there.
Well, Twitter's really cool. I'll help you with that.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not very hot on Instagram, but I love Twitter.
Oh, so there you go.
Cool. Okay, well, it's fantastic to talk to you, Millie. I love the work you're doing and it's great that you're – I love it when people are just so – positive about choosing to be alcohol free, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? And sharing these little bits of inspiration, you know, for somebody who's maybe at that part of their journey. We didn't get into the whole discussion about sober sex. We'll have to maybe there's probably time. Another whole session there.
Well, I'm seeing you on Monday, so maybe we can talk about that again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely a whole episode to be done on sober sex.
Yeah.
Whatever age you are, I'm guessing. Millie, thank you so much. You've been a great guest. I really appreciate it. Millie from Sober Girl Society. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Millie Gooch from Sober Girl Society, and Scott has also agreed to be a podcast guest. So listen up for that in the next few weeks. I always promise self-care tips on this show, and we did outline a few of the takeaways from our event earlier on. But I thought I'd pick up again on something that I hear people say a lot when they first quit boozing, and that is that people feel as though they've swapped one addiction for another, and often that's because the sugar cravings kick in. So people are craving chocolate, they're craving, you know, sweets, ice cream, and interestingly, although I am, you know, queen of health and well-being and imperfectly natural living, the imperfectly natural bit really comes into play here, because my self-care tip, especially for those early weeks and months, would be to eat well, but actually don't worry about those sugar cravings to start with. Now, that might seem like a completely contradictory statement. You're not going to be eating well if you're craving sugar. But I really believe that if you focus on not on what you're giving up, but focus on what you're gaining and really focus on getting well and really loving healthy food. So add some really good healthy food into the mix. Even if you don't usually have really good, you know, lots of fruit and veg, then have lots of fruit and veg. We've spoken about it before. It's easy to do in the form of a juice. So if you're not a fan of piles of broccoli and spinach and Brussels sprouts, I mean, who is? You know, just juice them. Juice them with, make sure you add a bit of apple to sweeten, or some carrot, or a little bit of pineapple, and that will sweeten it. And that will just get, you know, that's a fantastic intake straight to your cells of the good stuff. And have as much healthy, good food as you can. Good fats, avocados, all of that kind of stuff. But then, on the other side of things, accept that you're not going to have the same quantities of empty calories and sugar that you were having. So it's very common to find yourself craving sugar at the beginning and finding that, you know, the ice cream and the chocolate is literally calling out to you sometimes even in the middle of the night. Now, you know, of course I'm not saying, hey, go for it, eat all the pies. But within reason, allow yourself a few, you know, of these naughty things, because the most important thing right now is to focus on quitting drinking. If that's what you've decided to do, if you've set yourself that challenge, then good for you. And it's non-negotiable. So if it means that you have to override that craving, you know, because by having a square of dark chocolate, have a square of dark chocolate, you know, but opt for those healthier versions of your favourite treat if you can. So rather than the regular confectionery, try dark, high percentage cacao, you know, cacao chocolate. It's actually good for you. Or make up something yourself. Grab some raw cacao and mix it with some ground almonds, or, you know, whatever you can make happen. If you've got a blender, it's super easy. But there's lots of stuff you can buy too. But try and opt for some of the stuff that's really good for you. And yes, of course, you're going to have the odd ice cream or whatever it is. And you know, that those cravings will pass too. A really good tip, I'm sure I've given you this one before, but in the early days, you just fancy something tiny as a snack. So get dates, get medjool dates, organic preferably, and put them in the freezer. And then when they've been in the freezer for a little while, you take them out and it's a bit like having a kind of luxury chocolate, but much better for you. Grapes work really well frozen as well. And of course, it's super easy to make your own ice cream, a version of. Just get some frozen berries and blend with yogurt, as long as you're not vegan, and a little bit of stevia to sweeten, and then pop it back, you know, pop it back in the freezer. Anyways, there are lots and lots of these kinds of recipes on my website on imperfectlynatural.com. And I'd love to hear your suggestions for beating the sugar cravings. Let us know what's worked for you, or your little recipes, if you like, for any sweet treats that are relatively healthy. Because, you know, that's an act of self-care. So use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July. We've still got some great natural giveaways on Instagram for that little thing that we're running, Stay Dry Till July. If you haven't heard me say that before, the only reason we're using that hashtag is because, this time of the year, whenever you started, maybe you did decide to do Dry January, maybe you're just coming on board now, but we reckon if you get to July, then hopefully you won't be looking back. So that's the hashtag that we're using on Instagram. Don't forget, it's at Janie Lee Grace. And I do say it every week, but if you are listening on iTunes, please subscribe, please rate and review the podcast. It makes a really big difference to us. Tell your friends, and remember, well done to you if you're on this path, and I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Janie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.